Yeah, it drove the producers nuts on the show because they'd be like, okay, talk about this. And I'd go into this huge long spiel and they'd be like, okay, now say it in one sentence.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in Milwaukee and then I moved out to Delafield, which is just between Madison and Milwaukee. So, and that's where I spent most of my time as a child.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I've got two brothers. And we moved out there when I was like in third grade, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are your brothers artists or
no,
anything?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that they have the potential to be, but they don't. I've tried to enlist their help for things, and then it yeah. just never works out, so.
And when we talked before, you talked about you grew up in a conservative home, and I
agree
with you. That was kind of the way I grew up as well.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about your childhood and, you know, your earliest memory of wanting to create something with your hands or when you decided?
Well, I mean, my father has artistic leanings, I guess would be a way to put it. And he always encouraged me to draw and stuff like that. So I've been drawing for as long as I can remember. I don't ever remember a time where I wasn't drawing. As far as special effects go, the making of the Michael Jackson Thriller video was kind of life-changing for me. I remember when I was a kid that video came out, and I remember sitting in my parents' rocking chair and just watching the making of a thing over and over and over again. So... that had a really strong impact on me, I think.
Okay. And tell me about your very first creation that you made.
What kind of, like, art creation?
Period.
Or?
Yeah, you said you drew...
I just remember drawing pictures of my cat a lot. We had a cat named Dumbo, who was actually quite smart. And I'd always draw Dumbo and give him to my dad. He still got one framed in his office.
Stuck it on there.
Yeah.
And then what about making something with your hands?
Well, it's funny because, like, when I went to school, and I went to school for art at UW-Madison, I mostly focused on painting and photography. And it wasn't until after I graduated from graduate school at UW-Milwaukee that I started sculpting. So I've only been really sculpting for, like, the past 3 years or so. It's pretty recent. I mean, I remember fiddling around with it, like, in high school, and, like, you know, you had to take ceramics, and,
sure.
you know, you get on the wheel, and then you make a cup, but it turns into a plate, and then it just is everywhere, but I didn't really do well with clay in school, but it wasn't until after grad school that I started.
And you know, was it, you just went to the store and said, you know, I'm going to buy a chunk of clay and start making something?
Pretty much, like, there was a couple little... pieces that I made for props for costuming, and then I would sculpt it and mold it and cast it. And the first large scale piece I made was a cat mask for my Khajiit character from the Elder Scrolls game. So that was resin, but
okay.
That was my first large scale sculpt.
So looking at that from what you're doing today,
huge leaps. Yeah, I mean, I still have the cat mask hanging up in my studio, and I still like it, but it's like I would approach it very differently now.
Right, and is that because you learned different fundamentals? I mean, did somebody say, this is how you can tweak this, or did you just say,
Well, I think when it comes to sculpting, I've been mostly self-taught. So for me, I always think that, and this is from teaching art, like, I taught drawing one in college, and I'd always tell students that art isn't about drawing, it's about seeing and understanding what you're seeing. And so for me, it was just learning anatomy from looking at it and how I can improve it, looking at other people's sculptures and their techniques and seeing like that kind of breakdown and how they use that and adapting it to my own work.
So it's fun to be self-taught because you just kind of learn what works best for you, not necessarily.
Well, I think the cool thing about being self-taught, and I feel like this is a thing that's really prevalent in the cosplay community too, is that you come up with innovative techniques for things. That sometimes you go about it, like you can read tutorials and you can learn like these cool things and stuff like that. But if you're self-taught, sometimes you look at it from a different perspective, and instead of going about it in a way you were taught, you go about it in a unique way that can lead to better techniques and more innovative techniques. And also horrible techniques that, you know, you have to correct down the line. So you got to be careful about that.
So you learn what not to do.
Oh, too. Yeah, yeah, totally.
And you mentioned Michael Jackson's video. What other things influenced you to really go in this direction?
Ooh, I'm trying to think. I don't know. I mean, I've always been interested in it. I've always been interested in the idea of changing your appearance to suit a role, which is funny because I actually don't like really wearing prosthetics or masks or anything, but I make them obsessively. but I think that that's always been of interest to me.
So when you say change your appearance, is it just for masks? Because, you know, you color your hair, you have tattoos. Yeah. Does it go farther than that with you?
Well,
I suppose
if we're being really introspective, maybe. But I don't really think of it that way, I guess.
Okay.
It's just, the tattoos are just, I like to decorate myself with my experiences. And yeah.
Let's talk about your schooling. And you know, you mentioned you had some degrees. And what drove you to say, you know, I want to keep furthering my degree versus just... You know, I just want to go sculpt and
That's a tough one. I graduated from Madison in 2001, and then I took about 3 years off, and I worked with a whole bunch of other artists in an art supply store in Evanston, Illinois, and still very good friends with a lot of them because they're all still working artists and everything. And I think that was a very profound experience for me because it really just taught me how people can work with the arts in different ways. And I decided that I wanted to teach at the university, so in order to do that you need an MFA. So I ended up getting in at UW-Milwaukee, and that's where I continued my graduate studies.
So talk about the teaching then, the teaching part of it.
I really love teaching. I taught at UWM for 2 years. I taught drawing one, and I also taught kickboxing.
Wow.
Yeah, and really enjoyed the teaching, but working within the university system is difficult sometimes, and it ended up just not working out for me. So I would like to go back to teaching at some point, but I'm trying to find the right system to work within.
You know, besides the Michael Jackson video, was there anything, you know, Halloween related that kind of pushed you towards one way or the other that you said, you know, I saw this, I might want to create something like that, or...
You know,
you love horror movies.
I love horror movies. Since I first saw it when I was probably middle school, maybe grade school, Predator. I've always wanted to make a Predator costume. Still haven't done it. It's on my like dream costumes list. But like as a kid, like for Halloween, I would always come up with these sort of like bizarre, unique costumes that were... Like, one year I was a dolphin trainer, and I had this dolphin puppet, and, like, I would put on little shows with it. And then, like, one year I was a unicorn rider, and I made this gigantic unicorn that I basically strapped to myself and walked around the neighborhood.
So you created those things yourself.
Yeah. And it was always just, like, some weird thing that I would come up with and be like, oh, this is a brilliant idea, and then I'd make it and do it. I never really had store-bought costumes as a kid.
Well, I would expect that you wouldn't. Being an artist, you know,
yeah.
Your creativity started early, so that's an avenue for you to...
Yeah.
And did you go trick-or-treating all the time?
We did go trick-or-treating, but I grew up in Delafield, and it's really spread out, like kind of like it is here, where, you know, you have to walk pretty far to get to the next house. So it was more of a testament to my endurance than it was about the actual getting of candy.
All right, so... You went to college, you taught at college, and how did you get from teaching at college to wanting to being a face-off?
Oh, it was kind of a weird journey. I was working at UWM, and at that point I was just teaching kickboxing, which I loved doing. But it got to the point where enrollment was so low that I couldn't continue to afford to pay for parking if I wanted to teach there. So I have a friend who was also teaching, and I ended up giving him my classes so that I could move on. And then I went into my business full time. And when Feralworks started, it was a costuming company. Like, I mostly sewed and made costume articles. And it's only been in the last, like, 2-3 years again when I started sculpting where I'm like, forget sewing, we're just going to go full into the sculpting. So it's been kind of a weird road. I had a studio for a while where I would just sew and take custom orders for costumes and everything.
And costumes for cosplay?
Yeah, for cosplay, sorry. Okay. Yeah, for I mean, there was some Halloween stuff in there too, and like some like weird stuff, like I made some plushies for people.
And then,
but
you
mostly
know,
costuming.
Have you watched Face Off forever?
Yeah, I've watched Face Off since it started.
Okay, so you just thought, hey.
Well, when I started watching, I thought, I've always been interested in special effects. It's always been my dream to be a special effects artist ever since seeing the Michael Jackson movie, and I feel like I kind of got sidetracked with the whole, you know, being an art teacher and everything like that. And I'm like, you know, I've always wanted to do this. I should just go for it. So I basically just started studying sculpting more and learning everything I could.
So what I'm hearing you say is you started sculpting because you wanted to be a contestant on the show.
Well, no, not because I wanted to be a contestant on the show, but because I was interested in that field. I'm like, I've always been interested in this field. Why am I not doing this, you know?
Yeah, what's holding you back?
Exactly. So it wasn't necessarily to specifically go on the show. It was just to try and find more work in that type of field.
Right.
But then I was like, well, you know, I can do all this stuff. Maybe I should try out.
So you're watching the show and you're like, I can do that.
Yeah. I can do that. I can mold.
Right. And so taking through the process of you decided I'm going to go for trying out.
Yeah.
What do you have to do? I mean, how do you get to that?
Well, I actually first tried out for season 9. And like you have to submit a portfolio, you have to do a little video about a makeup application. And at that point, I had mostly just done little stuff, like little prosthetics and whatever. So I just thought, well, whatever. I got the stuff on hand. It's like not that big of a process. I'll go for it. So I did, and I actually ended up getting very far in the process. They flew me up to LA, I did the interview there, and I think I was a backup. So if someone had bailed on season 9, I might have been called.
Wow.
So I was really close. And after that, I'm like, I don't know if I'll do it again, but they contacted me, and they're like, you want to try out again? I'm like,
sure.
It wasn't that much. My work had gotten much better.
Sure.
Honestly, Frank, it was probably much, much better that I waited for the next cycle, that they brought me on that cycle, because I learned so much more in that time period. But yeah, so that was it. It was kind of like, just like, let's try it, let's see if this works. And
and your family is supportive of it?
Hmm?
Your family is supportive?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. My husband's an engineer. I mean, he comes from a very like logical, mathematical perspective, and I'm much more the creative type. So I always say together we make a really well-rounded individual. But yeah, he was like, you know, you've always wanted to do this, just go for it. It's a great opportunity. You know, people see your work, and you always like it. You know, I'm always all about challenging myself and trying to work outside of my comfort zone.
Sure.
He's like, this is a great opportunity to do that. So.
Yeah. What better way to be outside of your comfort zone than on national TV.
Exactly. Well, I mean, like when I was in grad school, my professors on my committee always pushed me to try to do things that made me uncomfortable because it always produced better work.
You know, when you work outside of what you want to do, you can really find out what your limits are. So I'm like, this is a good opportunity to do that.
And then, you know, obviously there's, today is Wednesday. We're
yeah.
Tonight's another episode.
Another
so
episode.
I can't wait to see that. So, tell me a little about a bit about living life under Face Off, if you can, up until this point. Obviously.
Well, Face Off is a very surreal experience. We called it TV jail because you're kind of put down on lockdown. They want you to focus on your craft, so you're not allowed internet access. You're not allowed TV. You're not allowed to communicate with your family. You're basically put on lockdown in this house. And I'm very fortunate in that the people that I was cast with were all wonderful individuals, and we got really close really fast and played silly games and stuff like that. A lot of would you rather. Okay. And so like that, it was sort of weird. It was actually, I was talking with Anthony Kozar once, and it was before I had applied for season 10, and it was after I had applied for season 9, and he saw me in full makeup, and he's like, so when are you going to go to makeup effects summer camp? And I'm like, that's perfect. And now having been through it, that's so perfect. It's makeup effects summer camp. So you get the dorm, you get the workspace, and you just go to town, and then you get tutored by Michael Westmore, which is awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, that's he comes in to critique, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, just on film, I know it gets all edited, but
he's amazing. He's just, I cannot, him and Mackenzie, and I think Mackenzie gets edited down a lot on the show. She has the best input. She's been on the show since the beginning. She knows what the judges like, and she's worn makeup for forever, and she's been a, you know, a family member of the Westmores since she was a kid, so she's always been around makeup. And the two of them, first of all, there's a lot of witty banter between the two of them that gets cut out. especially when they disagree, which is hilarious. But they're both just so kind, and they have so much input, and it's insightful. It's very insightful. And, you know, and they don't have a lot of time to talk with us, but it's really, the stuff that they give us is really to the point and helpful.
Sure. And then, you know, sometimes on the show I see them really not liking someone's character, and that, you know, the person or the team has to totally start over. I mean,
yeah.
How is that? That's got to be, I don't know if it's ever happened to you. On the show it hasn't yet, but.
I certainly saw it happen. Like, you know, like with Ant and Jirogi last week, and, you know, you can't really hear what they're saying because they were like across the room from me,
okay.
But you could see that they're not digging it.
And is it as much of a time crunch on you as it seems on the show?
Like, I mean, it's pretty intense. The first day you get presented the challenge, which that can take up to about like 5 or 6 hours of filming, depending on if they have to drive you out to the location or whatever. Then they drive you back to the lab, and then you get 5 hours in the lab. And then the next day you get 10 hours in the lab. And then the last day you get 4 hours in the lab to apply. Then there's a big break in there, where we're like, you get dinner, and then like we change clothes and stuff like that, and then we get an hour of last looks. So that hour of last looks is usually fixing things that went wrong while, you know, like the models were eating and stuff. I mean, the models, I gotta say, they're wonderful, wonderful people. They're great actors. They're probably the most patient individuals ever that put up with our crap. But you know, edges get loose when they're eating and stuff like that. So it's just fixing that and. It is as hectic as it seems. I mean, there's definitely down times where it's like, okay, I'm in a good groove. We're all working, you know. The producers would always be like, guys, you need to talk more. It's like, we're all focused.
Right. And your brains are just working like
that. Yeah, for sure.
And talk about the competition side of it. You know, you mentioned that you had a great group of
people. We did. We had a great group of people. I mean, it is a competition. But I think we all, first of all, before we even started filming, we agreed as a group to help each other up until, I think, the second to last challenge. We're like, if you need help and you know how to do it, you volunteer that information if you have the time. You know, obviously, if you don't have the time, then whatever. But it was a great environment for learning, too, because a lot of the people in my cast, everybody except for me, went to school. For makeup, and a lot of people have real life experience and worked on sets and everything like that, and I learned so much from my peers there, because everyone was very open with information, and like a lot of times I know you see it in the show, but like people are like helping each other open molds and stuff like that. Like if you have time and it's just a menial task like that, we'd always help each other because you want to compete with someone at their best. So if you're competing with them and the reason they're doing poorly is because their mold was stuck and you could have helped them, you want to compete with their makeup, not their mold. So I think it was a very positive environment, and we really pushed each other to do our best and help each other.
That's really encouraging to hear, because most what you hear about reality shows, yeah. if you will, it's they want to ensue drama. They're trying to get each other, you know.
Yeah, the producers, they never pushed us to do drama or anything like that. It was really a cohesive, cooperative environment.
We're all in this together.
And I think like when you're putting like these strange like restricted circumstances, like where we're all under lockdown in these houses, like you kind of bond with people because
yeah.
you have to.
Miserable, right?
Yeah. So I think that because of that, you know, we were all inclined to help each other do our best.
And, you know, then when you live with somebody in a house that you don't know the first time you met.
Yeah. You get familiar real fast.
Yeah.
You
know, this guy snores, that girl.
Oh, yeah.
Forever under makeup. I mean,
well, for me, it was really funny because I'm a sleep talker, and Mel is a sleep talker, and so we'd have sleep conversations. Yeah.
Was that ever recorded?
No, that was not recorded.
That would have been great. And, you know, is it a huge house that they put
in? Yeah, it was a mansion. It was the same house that they've used in previous seasons, I think after... Like season 5 and up, I think it was all in the same house. But they didn't film any reality at the house for us.
And that's probably okay for you.
I was fine with it.
You know, you can go home.
Yeah.
Booking air quotes. And
yeah.
And...
Well, it was a pretty big space and it had a huge yard. So there was always places where you could find privacy if you needed it. But in general, I think that, you know, we sought out each other's company and just wanted to hang out. It's not like you can go read a book because you don't have books. So.
Oh, so they didn't, you weren't even allowed to read?
No. We weren't allowed pens and paper because they didn't want us to be sketching or anything. So it was, like, we had a deck of cards and My Little Pony Monopoly. And like I said, a lot of Would You Rather.
So, was there something that you know, this is not me, I need to get over this, or?
We're talking, I mean, like, the hardest thing was being away from my family, for sure. I have a 4-year-old son, and, you know, like, not being able to see him every day, talk to him, it was really hard. But competition-wise, I hate whimsical. So, we had that whimsical challenge for the second one, I'm just like, ugh. Like, I've been way over my head.
No, but you did well.
Well,
yeah.
I think that was in large part due to, I mean, Rob really liked whimsical, and he was keeping it light, whereas I really wanted to go dark, but they're like, oh, no, you can't do it. I'm like, yeah, you're right. But whimsical, I feel like it's such a weird place to be with special effects, especially on makeup, because it's really easy to go into the uncanny valley, which I think we kind of did a little bit. But I don't know. That was hard.
And so talk about that a little bit. Is there just a natural kind of, I'm going to take the lead on this, I'm not? I mean,
well, for us, like specifically with the group with Rob and Johnny and I, we all had our strong points. Like, I'm pretty good at conceptualizing, so I came up with the whole backstory. Rob was really into the whimsical, so he had some really great ideas that weren't obvious, I think. Because, like, you know, the obvious thing would be to make a guy with a lollipop head.
Right.
And we're like, no, we'll do that as the hair, and, like, he's made of candy. And then Johnny, he was just really supportive and excited to help out, and he's really good at application. So he took point on that with Rob. I kind of took the back seat there, but did a lot of the painting and stuff like that. So it was just like, you know, if you know somebody's good at something, you let them take the lead on it, and then you kind of...
So is that a natural process that happens, or is it like,
I felt it was really natural because, okay. I mean, in my opinion, oops, sorry, hitting the mic, I always do that. in my opinion, you know, we're there to win. So if you're butting heads with your teammate, you're not producing your best work. So it's in everybody's best interest to cooperate.
Yeah, so you really have to go in it with, I'm not always going to be right.
Yeah.
And
you have to listen to everybody's ideas, and maybe their ideas are better, and you can't have such a big ego that you are unwilling to see other people's ideas. So I think that was huge and important. And like, you know, people, they're like, well, I would never do this. And it's like, well, but you're on a TV show. You in think of it as a, I always thought of it as a job. We are doing makeup for our client. We have to give them what they want with what little we know of what they want. So you're going to do things that maybe aren't you, but whatever, you can go home and do that.
So, you know, what's more nerve-wracking, seeing the judges go up there and get, you know, inches from your
that was a little nerve-wracking,
or just it being on TV?
I find that it's incredibly surreal to watch myself on television. I don't really like it. The reason I did this is because, especially in the Midwest, and because I can't move out, or, you know, I can't travel really because of my family, I wouldn't have an experience like this otherwise. Like, here's a chance to meet, you know, people who are in the industry, are working today, have valuable input. So it was just such a tremendous opportunity. For me, the TV part is kind of secondary. I mean, it's cool that it's on TV and people across the world are seeing my work. You know, I would never get that kind of exposure otherwise. But, I mean, I really did it for the experience. I don't remember what the question was.
Well, no, I was talking about, you know, what, is it worse that your stuff is scrutinized on TV in front of everyone,
okay,
or the judges being inches?
For me personally, I think it's more stressful having people scrutinize me in their security of their own home. Yeah. I got a dressing down by an 8-year-old the other day about what I should have done right. I'm like, yep, you're right. That I did that wrong. And the thing is that, you know, you are not, when you watch yourself in the show, you're like, yeah, that was a bad decision and I shouldn't have done that. And you know when you're making mistakes. So to have someone point it out like online is kind of frustrating. But what was I gonna say? But with the judges, like I said, I pictured them as my client. If they don't like what I'm doing, I need to figure out what they do want me to do. So I tried to take every little schnibble of advice that they would give me and, you know, apply it to my next makeup. And I mean, like I said, I have two graduate degrees. I have my master's and my master's of fine arts. You know, so I've had to do two thesis defenses.
Sure.
A degree wasn't riding on the judges.
Right.
The worst thing that would happen is I'd get sent home. Yeah. So.
And you get to see your family.
Right? Yeah, and I get to see my family. So it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just,
right.
And again, it was just a tremendous opportunity. So you can't say no to that. And like everything that they said, I mean, even if it stung a little bit, it's to make you a better artist. So it's not like, I never took their criticisms personally.
It was always constructive.
It was, well, I gotta say, Glenn Hetrick, like he comes off as kind of a hard ass on the show. Best judge. Like, I mean, they're all good. They're all good. But he would always give us like advice and like how we could do something to make it better. Like, and I mean, I think that comes from his years in the makeup industry and this knowing how to talk about it. But he would just have the coolest things, like the coolest ideas, and he'd be like, well, I didn't like what you did here, but here's how you can make it better. And it's like, oh, I can take that with me and make it
so
better.
That's not typically caught on camera.
No, it's not.
They just literally judge you.
Well, you got to think about it. Like, they film, let's see, 5 + 5 + 10. So there's 20 hours of footage in the lab and in last looks. Okay, that's not counting judging or the reveal, really. From 4 different cameras. So we're up to about 80 hours there. Plus interviews, the judging, which can take hours, and like the reveal of the challenge, which can take hours. And they got to condense that down to 45 minutes. So they got to cut out a lot. Which is unfortunate because there's some real gems that you don't see. Although they did leave in Paul Rubens talking about nipples a lot, which
yes.
Is kind of awesome.
You touched on it a little bit as far as time frames that you have, but like what's a typical day? I mean, what time do you have to get up and what time do you
have to Well, we'd always have a wheels up time that they would put on this little chalkboard in the kitchen. And that would be the time we have to be ready to leave the house. And we'd all have our little book bags that had like our personal items that we might need. So we all look like we're going and lining up and getting in the bed. We're all like, we're going to school. It's ridiculous. But yeah, usually we'd have to have wheels up at around 7:30 in the morning. And then we'd go to the lab. We'd have to sit outside there while they're finishing preparations, get all mic'd up, all that stuff, and then head into the lab. And then just, as we had a lot of freedom in the lab, which was nice, because we just had to do our thing and they just filmed us. But like outside of that, it was a lot more regimented. Like, you know, you have to be here at this time. You have to, you know, tell us when you're going to go to the bathroom. You have to.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You know, you're in the middle of doing something and, you know, I just got to go. There's three cameras right in your face.
Well, then we all get pretty, you're mic'd up when you're going to the bathroom. I'm like, I'm sorry, dudes.
They're like, take that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there really is no privacy, like, when they're doing the filming. And you kind of just have to roll with it.
Sure.
The poor audio guys, they were I was always so sweaty because it was so hot. And I'd hand them back the mic at the end of the day. I'm like, I'm really sorry. It's really gross. Like, but I guess a bunch of them worked on Biggest Loser.
Oh.
So they were like, this is nothing.
So is there anything that people would be shocked to know about?
Shocked to know. I think probably the craziest thing I do is I do pole dancing.
Okay.
It started out, it's a very long story. It all started when I first had my son, and I'd have to get up in the middle of the night to nurse him. And I would play Assassin's Creed while I was nursing.
Okay.
And I'm like, this looks awesome. I want to do this. So I signed up for the Tough Mudder. And after doing that, or after I signed up, I'm like, I have no upper body strength. I got to build that up. So then I signed up for these pole classes in my area and built up my upper body strength, did the Tough Mudder, passed it. I didn't die. And then, but I really like the pole, so I just kept going. So I do that. I've been doing it for like 4 years now. And like I can do inverts and like hold my body up upside down.
Wow.
And it's like a lot of strength. And honestly, the people in my pole, we call my pole family, most supportive people for me going on Face Off. Like they encouraged me to apply. They all watched the show, like before I even told them I was interested in this stuff. They all come from very different walks of lives and they're all just like, no, Melissa, you have to go for it. And like they wanted me to apply. They wanted to see what I would do. You know, they are living it up right now. They love watching it on TV. It's just like, I can't ask for a more supportive group of people.
No, that's, I wouldn't have thought of that as a way to, I'm going to increase my upper body strength. You know, in my mind, if I increase my upper body strength, I go to the gym and I do whatever. But
well, I was doing that already. I was working on, like, I had a whole body weight routine. And I'm really into exercise, like, with the kickboxing and everything like that. I've always been into it. But I'm like, this is outside my comfort zone. I want to push myself to go beyond my limits. And
wow. So have you competed?
Not yet. I lost a lot of my strength when I was out in California for Face Off. Because they don't have a pole there. And honestly, like, when you're filming for that long and when you get home, you're just like, so I would work out when we had less on the interview days, I would usually work out. They had a little gym and I would, you know, do squats and bench presses and stuff like that, but still lost a lot of practical strength. Anyway, I don't know. Where were we going with that?
Yeah. We're just talking about, you know, that's a unique way to want to build up.
Yeah.
Body.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You told me why, because it's out of your comfort zone.
And it ended up being, like, one of the best decisions of my life. Like, it's just, I would have never met these awesome people otherwise, so.
And your kickboxing side.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I love watching MMA.
Yeah.
But I don't know, are there degrees to kickboxing?
Well, at the time when I started teaching kickboxing, I was in karate. And my karate sensei was having me teach some of the lower level classes and work with the people that needed maybe a gentler touch, I guess you could say. Like I often got paired up with pregnant women because I had really good control. And after that, he's like, you're really good at this. So he hooked me up with the sport and rec department at UW-Milwaukee. And he's like, she'd be a great kickboxing teacher. And I worked with them to come up with the curriculum. And
oh, wow. You had to develop the curriculum.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed it, honestly. It was like 8-week sessions. So there was 4 sessions during the school year. And it was just amazing to see somebody come from being like really shy and like, you know, like they don't know what they're doing to like just being able to wallop through somebody. So it was,
well, yeah, from a teacher's perspective,
it's so gratifying. Yeah. And like I'd have people come over and take all the classes again. So there's not really any like belt training or anything in the kickboxing. It was supposed to be like a cardio class, but I always taught like self-defense. And I tried to adapt the curriculum to what the individuals wanted. Like I had one guy who was going up for an MMA, you know, he wanted to fight MMA. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not an MMA fighter, but here's what I know. And I gave him everything I knew and like asked around with my karate people, like, what do you recommend for... So I'd always try to give them the best information I could.
Yeah, because an MMA fighter, you have to be so well-rounded. I mean, yeah. You're using every part of your body.
I told him, I'm like, you got to take like judo or jiu-jitsu, anything with a floor game, because I know for me personally, when I get pinned, like it's kind of over. My floor game is terrible.
Well, kickboxer, you're used to standing up.
Yeah. So. I mean, I have some like moves that I can use, but like it's not that good.
What is that, you know, if I'm watching this and I saw you on Face Off, but I don't know if I'm a local person, how I can...
Okay, Feralworks is my company. I mostly sell things through Etsy, but I am going to hopefully move soon to my own store. But yeah, I work with people mostly online, but I'm happy to meet with people in person to create items that they want. So a lot of stuff that I make tends to be geared towards cosplay, but I also do... items that I just think are cool. And people ask me to customize them for their taste. So there's a lot of back and forth with my clients. And yeah, I mean, I like working with people to help them realize their vision. Again, I have the Etsy store. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, all that jazz is Feralworks. So
okay. So it's all Feralworks?
It's all Feralworks.
Where's Melissa Eddy 20 years from now?
Lounging on my jet.
That's cool.
What I would really like to do is, I want to keep working as an artist, but I think what I'd really like to do is get into concept art. I think that my strong point and what I enjoy personally is creating characters and backstories and stuff like that. And so I think it's great to have an understanding of how a makeup applies to an actor, to understand like how you can mesh one thing into the other to create an even better character. So I think I've got the groundwork to be a good concept artist. So I really hope that I can break into that field, doing sculpting like maquettes, just taking ideas from the director and running with it and creating creatures based on their vision.